Good evening. I was going to record tonight's story into two parts so that you could have two sizable half-hour chunks of good listening, because it's a rather long one, but I wanted to read it to you. And then I got started and found that I really couldn't stop because it's just so good that it demanded to be read all in one sitting. Which means that you are in for a long one, a full hour to be exact, which is very old-time radio hour-ish, as has just been pointed out to me. So what you should do before we get started is sit down in your rocking chairs and light a fire and smoke a pipe, except you shouldn't because you shouldn't smoke, and do whatever else it takes to get yourself ready for me. It's bedtime story hour. It is Wednesday the 17th of May, 2006. Which means I need to call my sister and wish her a happy birthday. And it's Mitt's Bedtime Story Podcast. The Diary of a Madman by Nikolai Gogol. October 3rd. Today, an extraordinary adventure took place. I got up rather late in the morning, and when Mavra brought me my polished boots, I asked what time it was. On hearing that it had long since struck 10, I quickly hastened to get dressed. I confess, I wouldn't have gone to the office at all, knowing beforehand what a sour face the section chief would make. He has long been saying to me, "Why is it you've got such a hotch-potch in your head, brother? You rush about frantically. You sometimes confuse a case so much the devil himself couldn't sort it out. You start the title in lower case, forget the date or number." Cursed Stork. He must be envious that I sit in the director's study and sharpen pens for His Excellency. In short, I wouldn't have gone to the office if it weren't for the hope of seeing the treasurer, and maybe cajoling at least some of my pay out of that Jew in advance. What a creature! For him to hand out any money a month ahead. Lord God, the last judgment would come sooner. Even if you beg on your life, even if you're destitute, he wouldn't hand out anything, the hoary devil. Yet at home his own cook slaps him in the face. The whole world knows it. I don't see the profit of working in my department. Absolutely no resources. In the provincial government, in the civil courts and treasuries, it's quite a different matter. There, lo and behold, a man squeezes himself into a corner and scribbles away. His tailcoat is vile. His mug begs to be spat in. But just look what sort of country house he rents. Don't even try giving him a gilded china cup. That, he says, is a gift fit for a doctor. He wants to be given a pair of trotters, or a droshky, or a beaver coat worth some 300 rubles. He looks like such a goody-goody. He talks with such delicacy. "Lend me your little knife to trim my little pen." And then he skims a petitioner so that the man's left in nothing but his shirt. It's true, our work is noble. It's clean everywhere, as you never see it in the provincial government. The tables are mahogany, and the superiors address each other formally. Yes, I confess, if it weren't for the nobility of the work, I'd long since have quit the department. I put on my old overcoat and took an umbrella, because it was pouring rain. There was nobody in the streets, only peasant women with their skirts pulled up over their heads, and Russian merchants under umbrellas and messenger boys caught my eye. Of the gentry I met only a fellow clerk. I saw him at an intersection. As I noticed him, I said to myself at once, "Oh, no! No, dear heart, you're not going to the office. You're rushing after that thing running ahead of you and ogling her little feet." Our fellow clerk is quite a customer, but by God he won't yield to any officer. If a pretty thing in a bonnet passes by, he's sure to tug after her." While I was thinking that, I saw a carriage drive up to a shop I was walking past. I recognized it at once. It was our director's carriage. "But he has no business in that shop," I thought. "It must be his daughter." I pressed myself to the wall. The lackey opened the doors, and she fluttered out of the carriage like a little bird. As she glanced right and left, as she flashed her eyebrows and eyes, "Good Lord, I'm lost. I'm utterly lost. And why does she have to go out in such rainy weather? Go on now, tell me women don't have a great passion for all these rags." She didn't recognize me, and I tried to wrap myself up the best I could, because the overcoat I had on was very dirty, and old-fashioned besides. Now, everyone wears cloaks with tall collars, and mine is short, overlapping, and the broadcloth isn't waterproof at all. Her lapdog didn't manage to get through the door into the shop and was left in the street. I know this dog. She's called Medji. A minute hadn't passed when I suddenly heard a piping little voice. "Hello, Medji." "Well, I'll be. Who said that?" I looked around and saw two ladies walking under an umbrella. One a little old lady, the other a young one. But they had already passed by when I heard beside me, "Shame on you, Medji!" "What the devil?" I saw Medji and the little dog that was following the ladies sniff each other. "Oho," I said to myself. "What, am I drunk or something? Only that seldom seems to happen with me." "No, Fidel, you shouldn't think so. I myself saw Medji say it. I've been bow-wow, I've been bow-wow-wow, very sick." "Ah, you pup, I confess I was very surprised to hear her speak in human language. But later, when I'd thought it over properly, I at once ceased to be surprised. Actually, there have already been many such examples in the world. They say in England, a fish surfaced who spoke a couple of words in a strange language that scholars have already spent 3 years trying to define, and still haven't found anything out. I also read in the papers about two cows that came to a grocer's and asked for a pound of tea. But I confess, I was much more surprised when Medji said, 'I wrote to you, Fidel. It must be that Pulkin didn't deliver my letter.' May my salary be withheld. Never yet in my life have I heard of a dog being able to write. Only a gentleman can write correctly. Of course, there are sometimes merchants' clerks, and even certain serfs who can write a bit, but their writing is mostly mechanical. No commas, no periods, no style.' This surprised me. I confess, lately, I had begun sometimes to hear and see things no one had ever seen or heard before. 'I'll just follow that little dog,' I said to myself, 'and find out what she is and what she thinks.' I opened my umbrella and followed the two ladies. They went down Goroshkovaya, turned on to Menshkinskaya, from there to Stolyarnaya, and finally to the Kukushkin Bridge, where they stopped in front of a big house. 'I know that building,' I said to myself. 'That's Zverkov's building. What a pile! And the sorts that live in it! So many cooks, so many out-of-towners, and our fellow clerks, like pups, one on top of the other. I, too, have a friend there, a very good trumpet player. the ladies went up to the fifth floor. Very well, I thought, I won't go up now, but I'll note the place and be sure to make use of it at the first opportunity. October 4. Today is Wednesday, and so I was in my superior's study. I came earlier on purpose, sat down to work, and sharpened all the pens. Our director must be a very intelligent man. His whole study is filled with bookcases. I read the titles of some of his books. It's all learning, such learning as our kind can't even come close to, all in French or in German. And to look at his face, bah, such importance shines in his eyes. I've never yet heard him utter an extra word, except maybe when I hand him some papers and he asks, "How's it outside?" "Wait, Your Excellency." Yes, there's no comparison with our kind, a real statesman. I notice, though, that he has a special liking for me. If only the daughter also. Ah, confound it. Never mind, never mind. Silence. I read the little B. What fools those Frenchmen are. So, what is it they want? By God, I'd take the lot of them and give them a good birching. I also read a very pleasant portrayal of a ball there, described by a Kursk landowner. Kursk landowners are good writers. After that, I noticed that it had already struck 12:30, and our man had never left his bedroom. But around 1:30 an event took place which no pen can describe. The door opened. I thought it was the director, and jumped up from the chair with my papers. But it was she. She herself. Heavens above, how she was dressed! Her gown was white as a swan, and so magnificent, pah! And her glance, oh, the sun, by God, the sun! She nodded and said, "Papa hasn't been here." Ay, 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 what a voice! A canary, truly a canary. "Your Excellency," I almost wanted to say, "don't punish me. But if it is your will to punish me, punish me with Your Excellency's own hand." But, devil take it, my tongue somehow refused to move, and I said only, "No, ma'am." She looked at me, at the books, and dropped her handkerchief. I rushed headlong, slipped on the cursed parquet, almost smashed my nose, nevertheless kept my balance, and picked up the handkerchief. Heavens, what a handkerchief! The finest cambric, ambrosia, sheer ambrosia. It simply exuded excellency. She thanked me, and just barely smiled, so that her sugary lips scarcely moved, and after that she left. I sat for another hour, when suddenly a lackey came in and said, "Go home, Atskensky Ivanovitch. The master has already gone out." I can't stand the lackey circle. There is one always sprawled in the front hall who won't even nod his head. Moreover, one of the knaves decided once to offer me some snuff without getting up. But don't you know, stupid churl, that I am an official, a man of noble birth? However, I took my hat and put my overcoat on by myself, because these gentlemen never help you, and left. At home I lay in bed most of the time. Then I copied out some very nice verses. I was gone from her an hour, yet it seemed to me a year. Life itself for me turned sour, and the future dark and drear. Must be Pushkin's writing. In the evening, wrapped in my overcoat, I went to Her Excellency's front gate, and waited for a long time to see whether she'd come for a carriage, to have one more look. But no, She didn't come out. November 6. Furious with the section chief. When I came to the office, he called me over and started talking to me like this. "Well, pray tell me, what are you up to?" "What am I up to? Why, nothing," I replied. "Well, think a little better. You're over 40, it's time now you got smart. What are you dreaming of? You think I don't know all your pranks? You're dangling after the director's daughter. Well, take a good look at yourself, only think, what are you? You're a zero, nothing more. You haven't got a kopeck to your name. Just look at yourself in the mirror. How can you even think of it?" Devil take him, his face bears a slight resemblance to a druggist's bottle, with a tuft of hair curled into a forelock sticking up, smeared with some pomade, so he thinks he's the only one allowed anything. I see why he's angry with me. He's jealous. Maybe he saw the signs of benevolence preferentially bestowed on me. Well, spit on him. Big deal, a court counsellor, hangs a gold watch chain on himself, alters 30-ruble boots. Who the devil cares? Am I some sort of nobody, a tailor's son or a sergeant's? I'm a nobleman, so I too can earn rank. I'm only 42, the age at which service just seriously begins. Wait, friend, we too will become a colonel, and, God willing, maybe something even higher. We'll get ourselves a reputation even better than yours. What, have you taken it into your head that there are no decent men except you? Just give me a ruched tailcoat, cut in the latest fashion, and let me have the same kind of necktie as you have. You won't hold a candle to me. No income, that's the trouble. November 8. Went to the theatre. The Russian fool Filatka was playing. Laughed a lot. There was some other vaudeville with funny verses about lawyers, especially about some collegiate registrar, written quite freely, so that I wondered how it passed the censors. And they said outright that merchants cheat people, and their sons are debauchers, and try to worm their way into the nobility. Also a very funny couplet about journalists, that they like denouncing everything. And the author asked the public for protection. Authors write very funny plays nowadays. I like going to the theatre. As soon as I have a penny in my pocket, I just can't keep myself from going. But there are such pigs among our fellow clerks. They decidedly will not go into the theatre, the clods, unless you give them a free ticket. One actress sang very well. I remembered the other. Ah, confound it, never mind. Never mind, silence. November 9. At 8 o'clock, I went into the office. The section chief assumed such an air as if he didn't notice my arrival. I, for my part, acted as if there had been nothing between us. Looked through and collated papers. Left at 4 o'clock. Passed by the director's apartment, but didn't see anybody. Lay in bed most of the time after dinner. November 11. Today, I sat in our director's study and sharpened 23 pence for him. And for her, aye, 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 4 pence for Her Excellency. He likes very much having more pains. Oh, what a head that must be. Quite silent, but in the head I think he ponders everything. I wish I knew what he thinks. What's cooking in that head? I'd like to have a closer look at those gentlemen's lives, at all those equivocations and courtly tricks, how they are, what they do in their circle. That's what I'd like to find out. I've met several times to strike up a conversation with His Excellency, only, devil take it, my tongue wouldn't obey me. I'd just say it was cold or warm outside, and be decidedly unable to say anything else. I'd like to peek into the drawing-room, where you sometimes see only an open door, yet into another room beyond the drawing-room. Ah, such rich furnishings, such mirrors and china. I'd like to peek in there, into that half Her Excellency's, that's what I'd like. Into the boudoir, with all those little jars and vials standing there, such flowers that you're unable to breathe on them. With her dress thrown down there, more like an air than a dress. I'd like to peek into her bedroom. There, I think, there are wonders. There, I think, there is paradise. Such as is not even to be found in heaven. To look at the little stool she puts her little foot on when she gets out of bed, at how a snow-white stocking is being put on that foot, aye, 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 never mind, never mind, silence. Today, however, it dawned on me clear as daylight. I recalled the conversation of the two little dogs I had heard on Nevsky Prospect. Very well, I thought to myself, I'll find out everything now. I must get hold of the correspondence those rotten little dogs have exchanged. I'll learn a thing or two from it. I confess, I had even called Medgie over once and said, "Listen, Medgie, we're alone now. I'll lock the door if you like, so no one can see. Tell me everything you know about the young miss, what and how she is. I swear to God I won't tell anybody." The cunning little dog put her tail between her legs, shrank to half a size, and quietly walked out of the door as if she hadn't heard anything. I've long suspected dogs of being much smarter than people. I was even certain they could speak, but there was only some kind of stubbornness in them. They're extraordinary politicians. They notice every human step. No. I'll go to Zverkov's building tomorrow at all costs, question Fidel, and if I'm lucky, get hold of all the letters Medgie has written to her. November 12. At 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I set out with the firm intention of seeing Fidel and questioning her. I can't stand cabbage, the smell of which comes pouring out of all the small shops on Menshkanskaya. Besides that, there was such a whiff of hell coming from under the gates of each house that I held my nose and ran for dear life. And those vile artisans produce so much soot and smoke in their workshops that it's decidedly impossible for a gentleman to walk there. When I got to the sixth floor and rang the bell, a girl came out, not so bad-looking, with little freckles. I recognized her. It was the same one who was walking with the old lady. She blushed slightly, and I understood at once. "You, my sweet, are looking for a fiancé." "What can I do for you?" she said. "I must have a word with your little dog." The girl was stupid. I knew at once she was stupid. At that moment the dog ran in, barking. I wanted to seize her, but she, vile thing, almost seized me by the nose with her teeth. I saw her basket in the corner, however. Aha! Just what I need. I went over to it, rummaged in the straw of the wooden box, and, to my greatest satisfaction, pulled out a small bundle of little papers. Seeing that, the nasty little dog first bit me on the calf, and then, when she realized I'd taken the papers, began squealing and fawning. But I said, "No, my sweet, good-bye," and rushed out. I suppose the girl took me for a madman, because she was extremely frightened. On coming home I wanted to get to work and sort these letters out at once, because I see poorly by candlelight. But Mavra had decided to wash the floor. These stupid Finnish women are always cleaning at the wrong moment. And so I went out to walk around and think this event over. Now I'll finally learn about all these affairs and intentions, all these springs, and finally get to the bottom of it. These letters will reveal everything to me. Dogs are smart folk. They know all the political relations, and so it's sure to be there, the picture of the man and all his doings. There'll also be something about her who... Never mind, silence! Toward evening I came home. Lay in bed most of the time. November 13. Well, now, let's see. The letter looks pretty clear. However, there's still something doggy in the writing. Let's read it. Dear Fidel, I still cannot get used to your common-sounding name. As if they couldn't have given you a better one. Fidel, Rosie, such banal tone. However, that's all beside the point. I'm very glad we've decided to write each other. The letter is written very correctly. Punctuation and even tricky spellings all in order. Not even our section chief can write like that, although he keeps saying he studied at some university. Let's see what comes next. It seems to me that sharing thoughts, feelings, and impressions with others is one of the foremost blessings in the world. The thought is drawn from some work translated from the German. Can't recall the title. I say it from experience, though. I've never run further in the world than the gates of our house, whose life flows by in pleasure, if not mine. My young mistress, whom Papa calls Sophie, loves me to distraction. Aye, aye, never mind, never mind. Silence. Papa also pets me very often. I drink tea and coffee with cream. Ah, ma chère, I tell you that I see no pleasure at all in those big bare bones our Polkin slobbers over in the kitchen. Only bones from wild game are good, and only before anyone has sucked out the marrow. Mixtures of several gravies are very good, only not with capers or herbs, but I know nothing worse than the habit of giving dogs little balls of bread. Some gentleman sitting at the table, after all holding all sorts of trash in his hand, begins to roll bread in those same hands, then calls you over and puts the ball into your teeth. It's somehow impolite to refuse, so you eat it. With disgust, but you eat it. Devil knows what this is. Such nonsense, as if there were no better subjects to write about. Let's look at the next page for something more sensible. I'm quite ready and willing to inform you of all that goes on in our house. I've already told you a little something about the man gentleman whom Sophie calls Papa. He's a very strange man. Ah, at last. Yes, I knew it. They have political views on all subjects. Let's see about Papa. A very strange man. He's silent most of the time. Speaks very rarely. But a week ago he talked to himself constantly.
Will I get it or won't I?
He would take a piece of paper in one hand, close the other empty one, and say, Will I get it or won't I? Once he addressed the question to me.
What do you think, Majee? Will I get it or won't I?
I could understand none of it, so I sniffed his boot and went away. Then, ma chère, a week later, Papa came home very happy. All morning, gentlemen in uniforms kept coming to him, congratulating him for something. At the table he was merrier than I had ever seen him before, told jokes, and after dinner he held me up to his neck and said, Look, Majee, what's this? I saw some little ribbon. I sniffed it, but found decidedly no aroma. Finally I licked it on the sly. It was a bit salty. This little dog seems to me to be much too... She ought to be whipped. Ah, so he's ambitious. That must be taken into consideration. Goodbye, ma chère. I must run, and so on, and so forth. I'll finish my letter tomorrow. Well, hello, here I am again. Today my mistress Sophie...
Ah, and so we shall talk about Sophie.
Oh, confound it! Never mind, never mind, let's go on. My mistress Sophie was in a great bustle. She was going to a ball, and I was glad that in her absence I'd be able to write to you. My Sophie is already greatly delighted to be going to a ball, though she's almost always angry as she's getting dressed. I simply don't understand, ma chère, the pleasure in going to a ball. Sophie comes home from the ball at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I can almost tell by her pale and skinny look that the poor thing was giving nothing to eat there. I confess I could never live like that. If I wasn't given hazel grouse with gravy or roast chicken wings, I don't know what would become of me. Gruel with gravy is also good, but carrots, turnips, and artichokes will never be good. Extremely uneven style. Shows at once that it wasn't written by a man. Begins properly, but ends with some dogginess. Let's have a look at another letter. A bit long. And no date. Ah, my dear. How one senses the approach of spring. My heart throbs as if it keeps waiting for something. There is an eternal humming in my ears, so that I often stand for several minutes with uplifted paws listening at the door. I'll confide to you that I have many wooers. I often sit in the window and look at them. Ah, if you only knew how ugly some of them are. The coarsest of all mutts, terribly stupid, stupidly written all over his face, goes down in the street most imposingly, imagining he's the noblest person, thinking everyone is looking only at him. Not a bit of it, I didn't even pay attention, just as if I hadn't seen him. And what a frightful Great Dane stops outside my window! If he stood on his hind legs, something the boar is surely incapable of doing, he'd be a whole head taller than my Sophie's papa, who is also quite tall and fat. The blockhead must be terribly impudent. I growled at him a little, but he couldn't have cared less. He didn't flinch, stuck his tongue out, hung his enormous ears, and stared in the window. What a clod! But don't think, ma chère, that my heart is indifferent to all suitors. Oh, no. If you saw a certain gallant who climbs over the fence from the neighbour's house, by the name of Trésor, ah, ma chère, he has such a cute muzzle. Pah! Devil take it! What rot! How can one fill letters with such silliness? Give me a man! I want to see a man! I demand food such as nourishes and delights my soul, and instead I get these trifles. Let's skip a page. Maybe it will get better. Sophie sat at her table sewing something. I was looking out the window because I enjoy watching passers-by, when suddenly a lackey came in and said, "Teplov!" "Show him in!" Sophie cried, and rushed to embrace me. "Ah, Medji, Medji, if you know who he is, dark hair, a camera junker, and such eyes. Dark and glowing like fire!" And Sophie ran to her room. A moment later, a young camera junker with dark side-whiskers came in, went up to the mirror, smoothed his hair, and glanced round the room. I growled a little, and kept my place. Sophie came out soon and bowed gaily to his scrapping, and I, as if noticing nothing, just went on looking out the window. However, I cocked my head a little to one side and tried to hear what they were talking about. Ah, ma chère, such nonsense they talked about! They talked about a lady who performed one figure instead of another during a dance, and how a certain Bobov looked just like a stork in his jabot and nearly fell down. how a certain Miss Liddon fancies she has blue eyes, whereas they're green, and the like. Well, I thought to myself, and if we compare the Kammerjunker with Tresor, heavens, what a difference! First of all, the Kammerjunker has a perfectly smooth, broad face with side whiskers around it, as if someone had tied it with a black band, while Tresor had slender little muzzle and a white spot right on his forehead. Between Tresor's waist and the Kammerjunker's, there's no comparing. The eyes, the gestures, the manners are not all alike. Oh, what a difference! I don't know, Masha, what she finds in her Teplov. Why does she admire him so? To me, it also seems that there's something wrong here. It can't be that a Kammerjunker could enchant her so. Let's see further on. It seems to me that if she likes the Kammerjunker, she'll soon be liking the clerk who sits in Papa's study. Ah, ma chère, if you could only see how ugly he is. A perfect turtle in a sack. What clerk might this be? He has the strangest last name. He always sits and sharpens pens. The hair on his head looks very much like hay. Papa always sends him out instead of a servant. I think the vile little dog is aiming at me. How is my hair like hay? Sophie can never help laughing when she looks at him. You're lying, you cursed dog! What a vile tongue! And if I don't know, it's a matter of envy. As if I don't know whose tricks these are. These are the section chief's tricks. The man has sworn undying hatred, and so he injures me. He keeps injuring me at every step. However, let's look at another letter. Maybe the thing will explain itself. Ma chère fidèle, you must excuse my not writing for so long. I've been in perfect ecstasy. It's entirely correct what some writer has said, that love has a second life. Besides, there are big changes in our house now. The Kammerjunker now comes every day. Sophie loves him to distraction. Papa is very happy. I even heard from our Gregory, who sweeps the floor and almost always talks to himself, that there will be a wedding soon, because Papa absolutely wants to see Sophie married to a general, or a Kammerjunker, or an army colonel. Devil take it! I can't read any more. It's all either Kammerjunker or general. All that's best in the world, all of it either goes to Kammerjunkers or generals. You find a poor treasure for yourself. Hope to reach out your hand to it. A Kammerjunker or a general plucks it away from you. Devil take it. I wish I could become a general myself. Not so as to get a hand in the rest of it, no. I want to be a general simply to see how they'll fawn and perform all those various courtly tricks and equivocations, and then to tell them that I spit on them both. Devil take it. How annoying. I've torn the stupid dog's letters to shreds. December 3. It can't be. Lies, the wedding won't take place. So what if he's a Kammerjunker? It's no more than a dignity. It's not anything visible that you can take in your hands. He's not going to have a third eye on his forehead because he's a Kammerjunker. His nose isn't made of gold. It's the same as mine or anybody else's. He doesn't eat with it. He smells. He doesn't cough. He sneezes. Several times already I've tried to figure out where all these differences come from. What makes me a titular councillor, and why on earth am I a titular councillor? Maybe I'm some sort of count or general, and only seem to be a titular councillor. Maybe I myself don't know who I am. There are so many examples in history. Some simple fellow, not only not a nobleman, but simply some tradesman, or even peasant. And it's suddenly revealed that he's some sort of dignitary, or sometimes even an emperor. If even a music sometimes turns out like that, what then may become of a nobleman?
Suddenly, for instance, I walk in wearing a general's uniform, an epaulette on my right shoulder and an epaulette on my left shoulder, a blue ribbon over my shoulder. What then? How is my beauty going to sing? What is Papa himself, our director, going to say? Oh, he's a man of great ambition. He's a mason, a downright mason, though he pretends to be this and that. I noticed right away he's a mason. Whenever he shakes a person's hand, he only holds out two fingers. But can't I be promoted this minute to Governor-General, or Intendant, or something else like that? I'd like to know, what makes me a titular councillor? Why precisely a titular councillor? December 5. I spent the whole morning today reading the newspapers. There are strange doings in Spain. I couldn't even make them out properly. They write that the throne is vacant, and that the officials are in a difficult position about the selection of an heir, which is causing disturbances. This seems terribly strange to me. How can a throne be vacant? They say some doña should ascend the throne. A doña cannot ascend a throne, simply cannot. There should be a king on the throne. But they say there is no king. It cannot be that there was no king. A state cannot be without a king. There is a king, only he's somewhere unknown. Possibly he's right there, but either some sort of family reasons or apprehensions about neighbouring powers, such as France and other countries, have forced him into hiding. Or there are other reasons of some sort. December 8. I was just about to go to the office, but various reasons and reflections held me back. I couldn't get these Spanish affairs out of my head. How can a doña be made a queen? They won't allow it, and first of all, England won't allow it, and besides the political affairs of the whole of Europe. The Austrian emperor, our sovereign, I confess, these events so crushed and shook me that I was decidedly unable to busy myself with anything all day long. Mavra observed to me that I was extremely distracted at the table, and indeed, it seems I absent-mindedly threw two plates on the floor, which proceeded to break. After dinner, I strolled around the toboggan slides. Couldn't arrive at anything constructive, mostly lay in bed and reasoned about the affairs in Spain. The year 2000, 43rd of April. This day is a day of the greatest solemnity. Spain has a king. He has been found. I am that king. Only this very day did I learn of it. I confess it came to me suddenly in a flash of lightning. I don't understand how I could have thought and imagined that I was a titular councillor. How could such a wild notion enter my head? It's a good thing no one has thought of putting me in an insane asylum. Now everything is laid open before me. Now I see everything as on the palm of my hand. And before, I don't understand, before everything around me was in some sort of fog. And all this happens, I think, because people imagine that the human brain is in the head. Not at all. It is brought by a wind from the direction of the Caspian Sea. First off, I announced to Mavra who I am. When she heard that the King of Spain was standing before her, she clasped her hands and nearly died of fright. This stupid woman had never seen a King of Spain before. However, I endeavoured to calm her down and assured her in gracious words of my benevolence that I was not at all hungry, that she sometimes polished my boots poorly. There benighted folk. It's impossible to tell them about lofty matters. She got frightened, because she's convinced that all kings of Spain are like Philip II. But I explained to her that there was no resemblance between me and Philip II, and that I didn't have a single capuchin. I didn't go to the office. To hell with it. No, friends, you won't lure me there now. I'm not going to copy your vile papers. The 86th of Martober, between day and night. Today our manager came to tell me to go to the office, since I hadn't been to work for over 3 weeks. I went to the office as a joke. The section chief thought I'd bow to him and start apologizing, but I looked at him with indifference, neither too wrathfully nor too benevolently, and sat down at my place as if not noticing anyone. I looked at all that office riff-raff and thought, what if you knew who was sitting amongst you? Lord God, what a rumpus you'd raise, and the section chief would start bowing as low to me as he now bows to the director. Some papers were placed in front of me so that I could make an abstract of them, but I didn't even set a finger to them. A few minutes later, everything was in turmoil. They said the director was coming. Many clerks ran up front to show themselves before him, but I didn't budge. When he was passing through our section, everybody buttoned up their tailcoats, but I, nothing of the sort. What is a director that I should stand up before him? Never. What sort of director is he? He's a doornail, not a director. An ordinary doornail, a simple doornail, nothing more. The kind used indoors. I was most amused when they slipped me a paper to be signed. They thought I'd write Chief Clerk so-and-so at the very bottom of the page. Not a chance. In the central place where the director of the department signs, I dashed off, Ferdinand the Eighth. You should have seen what reverent silence ensued, but I merely waved my hand, saying, no need for any tokens of homage, and walked out. From there I went straight to the director's apartment. He was not at home. The lackey didn't want to be let in, but after what I said to him, he just dropped his arms. I made my way straight to the boudoir. She was sitting before the mirror, jumped up, and backed away from me. However, I didn't tell her I was the King of Spain. I only said that such happiness awaited her as she could not even imagine, and that, despite the machinations of enemies, we would be together. I did not want to say anything more, and walked out. Oh, she's a perfidious being. Woman. Only now have I grasped what woman is. Till now no one has found out who she's in love with. I'm the first to discover it. Woman is in love with the devil. Yes, no joking. It's stupid what physicists write, that she's this or that. She loves only the devil. See there, from a box in the first balcony? She's aiming her lorgnette. You think she's looking at that fat one with the star? Not at all. She's looking at that devil standing behind his back. There he is, hiding in his tailcoat. There he is, beckoning to her with his finger. And she'll marry him. Marry him, and all those high-ranking fathers of theirs, all those who fidget in the directions and worm their way into the court and say they're patriots and this and that. Income. Income is what these patriots want. Mother, father, God, they'll sell them all for the money, the ambitious Judases. It's all ambition, and ambition is caused by a little blister under the tongue with a little worm in it the size of a pinhead. And it's all the doing of some barber who lives in Gorochkovaya Street. I don't know what his name is, but it's known for certain that he,
together with some midwife, wants to spread Mohammedanism through the world, and as a result, they say, in France the majority of people already accepts the faith of Mohammed. Date none. The day had no date. Strolled incognito on Nevsky Prospect. His Majesty the Emperor drove by. The whole city took their hats off, and I did too. However, I didn't let on that I was the King of Spain. I considered it unsuitable to reveal myself right there in front of everybody, because, first of all, I have to present myself at court. The only thing holding me up is that I still don't have royal attire. If only I could get some sort of mantle. I was going to order one from a tailor, but they're perfect asses, and besides, they neglect their work completely. They've thrown themselves into affairs, and are mostly busy paving the streets with stones. I decided to make a mantle out of my new uniform, which I had only worn twice. But, to prevent those blackguards from ruining it, I decided to sew it myself, after locking the door so that no one could see. I cut it all up with scissors, because the style has to be completely different. Don't remember the date. There was no month either. Devil knows what there was. The mantle is all ready and sewn up. Mavra cried out when I put it on. However, I still refrain from presenting myself at court. No deputation from Spain so far. Without deputies, it's not proper. There'll be no weight to my dignity. I expect them any moment. The first. I am extremely astonished at the slowness of the deputies. What reasons can be holding them up? Can it be France? Yes, that is the most unfavourably disposed power. I went to inquire at the post office whether the Spanish deputies had arrived, but the postmaster is very stupid, and he doesn't know anything. No, he says, there are no Spanish deputies here, and if you wish to write letters, we accept them at the set rate. Devil take it, what's a letter? A letter's nonsense. Apothecaries can write letters. Madrid, 30th February. And so I'm in Spain, and it happened so quickly that I've barely come to my senses. This morning the Spanish deputies came to me, and I got into the carriage together with them. The extraordinary speed seemed strange to me. We drove so quickly that in half an hour we reached the Spanish border. However, there are railroads everywhere in Europe now, and steamships drive very fast. Spain is a strange land. When we entered the first room, I saw a lot of people with shaved heads. I guessed, however, that they must be either grandees or soldiers, since they shaved their heads. The behaviour of the Lord Chancellor, who led me by the arm, seemed extremely strange to me. He pushed me into a little room and said, "Sit here, and if you still want to call yourself King Ferdinand, I'll beat the wish out of you." But I, knowing it was nothing but a provocation, replied in the negative, for which the Chancellor hit me twice on the back with a stick, so painfully that I nearly cried out, but caught myself, having remembered that this was the knightly custom of entering upon high rank, because in Spain they still preserve knightly customs. Being left alone, I decided to occupy myself with state affairs. I discovered that China and Spain are absolutely one and the same land, and it is only out of ignorance that they are considered separate countries. I advise everyone purposely to write Spain on a piece of paper, and it will come out China. But nevertheless, I was extremely upset by an event that is going to take place tomorrow. Tomorrow, at 7 o'clock, a strange phenomenon will occur. The earth is going to sit on the moon. This has also been written about by the noted English chemist Wellington. I confess I felt troubled at heart when I pictured to myself the extraordinary delicacy and fragility of the moon.
for the moon is usually made in Hamburg and made quite poorly. I'm surprised England doesn't pay attention to this. It's made by a lame cooper, and one can see that the fool understands nothing about the moon. He used tarred rope and a quantity of cheap olive oil, and that's why there's a terrible stench all over the earth, so that you have to hold your nose. And that's why the moon itself is such a delicate sphere that people can't live on it, and now only noses live there. And for the same reason, we can't see our own noses, for they're all in the moon. And when I pictured how the earth is a heavy substance, and in sitting down may grind our noses into flour, I was overcome with such anxiety that, putting on my stockings and shoes, I hurried to the State Council chamber to order the police not to allow the earth to sit on the moon. The shaved grandees, great numbers of whom I found in the State Council chamber, were all very intelligent people, and when I said, "Gentlemen, let us save the moon because the earth wants to sit on it," they all rushed at once to carry out my royal will, and many crawled up the wall in order to get the moon. But just then the Lord Chancellor came in. Seeing him, they all ran away. I, being the king, was the only one to remain. But to my surprise, the Chancellor hit me with a stick and drove me to my room. Such is the power of the popular custom in Spain. January of the same year, which came after February. I still cannot understand what sort of country Spain is. The popular customs and court etiquette are absolutely extraordinary. I decidedly do not understand anything. Today they shaved my head, though I shouted with all my might about my unwillingness to be a monk. But I cannot even remember how I felt when they began dripping cold water on my head. I've never experienced such hell before. I was ready to start raging, so that they were barely able to hold me back. I don't understand the meaning of this strange custom at all. A stupid, senseless custom. The folly of the kings, who still have not abolished it, is incomprehensible to me. Judging by all probabilities, I guess I may have fallen into the hands of the Inquisition. And the one I took for the Chancellor may be the Grand Inquisitor himself. Only I still cannot understand how a king can be made subject to the Inquisition. True, this might come from the French side, especially from Polignac. Oh, he's a sly customer, Polignac. He's sworn to injure me as long as I live. And so he persecutes me. Persecutes me. But I know, friend, that you're being led by the Englishman. The Englishman is a great politician. He fusses about everywhere. The whole world knows that when England takes snuff, France sneezes. The 25th. Today the Grand Inquisitor came into my room, but hearing his footsteps from far off, I hid under a chair. Seeing I wasn't there, he began calling out. First he shouted, "Poprischin!" But I didn't say a word. Then, "Accenti Ivanovich, titular councillor, nobleman!" I kept silent. "Ferdinand the Eighth, King of Spain?" I wanted to poke my head out, but then thought, "No, brother, you're not going to hoodwink me. We know you, you'll pour cold water on my head again." Nevertheless, he saw me and chased me out from under the chair with his stick. That cursed stick is extremely painful. However, all this has been rewarded by my present discovery. I've learned that every rooster has his spain, that it's located under his feathers. The Grand Inquisitor nevertheless left me in wrath and threatened me with some punishment. But I utterly ignored his impotent anger, knowing that he was acting mechanically, as the Englishman's tool.
The of 34 February 3349. No, I no longer have the strength to endure. God, what are they doing to me? They pour cold water on my head. They do not heed, do not see, do not listen to me. What have I done to them? Why do they torment me? What do they want from poor me? What can I give them? I have nothing. It's beyond my strength. I cannot endure all their torments. My head is burning and everything is whirling before me. Save me. Take me, give me a troika of steeds swift as the wind. Take the reins, my driver, ring out my bells, soar aloft, steeds, and carry me out of this world. Father, father, so that there's nothing to be seen. Nothing. Here is the sky billowing before me. A little star shines in the distance. A forest races by with dark trees and a crescent moon. Blue mist spreads under my feet. A string twangs in the mist. On one side the sea, on the other, Italy. And there I see some Russian huts. Is that my house, blue in the distance? Is that my mother sitting at the window? Dear mother, save your poor son. Shed a tear on his sick head. See how they torment him. Press the poor orphan to your breast. There's no place for him in the world. They're driving him out. Dear mother, pity your sick child. And do you know that the Dey of Algiers has a bump just under his nose?